Krishna, this morning my reading comes from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 7, entitled The Sacrifice Performed by Daksha, text 21 and 22. Tamupagatamala alaksya Savi Surya Ganadaya Pani Musahasutaya Amendra Chayakshanayaka Tam, him, upagatam, arrived, alaksya, after seeing, save, all, shurigana araya, the demigods and others, panimu, obeisances, sahasa, immediately, utaya, after standing up, Brahma, Lord Brahma, Indra, Lord India, Triaksha, Lord Shiva, who has three eyes, Nayakaha, led by. Translation, as soon as Lord Vishnu was visible, all the demigods, Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, the Gandharvas and all present there, immediately offered their respectful obeisances by falling down straight before him. Please repeat, as soon as Lord Vishnu was visible, of the demigods, Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, and the Gandharvas, and all present there, immediately offered their respectful obeisances by falling down straight before him. It appears that Lord Vishnu is the Supreme Lord, even of Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma. What to speak of the demigods, Gandharvas, and ordinary living entities? It is stated in a prayer, Yam Brahma Rumendra Rudra Mamruta. All the demigods worship Lord Vishnu. Similarly, Yana Vastita Tadgatena Manasa Pashanti Yam Yogina. Yogis concentrate their minds on the form of Lord Vishnu. Thus, Lord Vishnu is worshipable by all demigods, all Gandharvas, and even Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma. Tad Vishnu Paramam Param Sara Pashanti Suraya. Vishnu is therefore the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even though Lord Shiva was previously referred to in prayers by Lord Brahma as the Supreme, when Lord Vishnu appeared, Shiva also fell prostrated before him to offer respectful obeisances. Read text 21. Lord Vishnu looked extraordinarily beautiful because the goddess of fortune and the garland were situated on his chest. His face was beautifully decorated with a smiling attitude which can captivate the entire world, especially the devotees. Fans of white hair appeared on both sides of the Lord like white swans, and the white canopy overhead looked like the moon. The smiling face of Lord Vishnu is pleasing to the whole world. Not only devotees, but even non-devotees are attracted by such a smile. This verse nicely describes how the sun, moon, eight-petaled lotus flower, and humming black bees were represented by the fans of hair, the overhead canopy, the moving earrings on both sides of his face, and his blackish hair. Altogether, accompanied by the conch shell, wheel, club, lotus flower, bow, arrows, shield and sword in his hands, these presented a grand and beautiful audience for Lord Vishnu, which captivated all the demigods there, including Daksha and Lord Brahma. So here, Srimad Bhagavatam is given a very rare description of God, Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, I say it's rare, in the Srimad Bhagavatam it's not so rare, but in other scriptures of the world is very rare. But you can actually get a description of God. Supreme Personality of Godhead. I read the previous sloka because Srila Prabhupada says in this verse, but he seems to be talking about things which aren't in this verse, which are in the previous verse. So I'll read these verses how the Lord appeared after the Lord Shiva directed the jagya sacrifice, and they offered oblations into the fire. Very soon then the Lord directly appeared on the back of Garuda, and here's the description of God. His complexion was blackish, his garments yellow like gold, and his helmet as dazzling as the sun. His hair was bluish, the color of black bees, and his face was decorated with earrings. His eight hands held a conch shell, wheel, club, lotus flower, arrow, bow, shield and sword, and they were decorated with golden ornaments such as bangles and bracelets. His whole body resembled a blossoming tree, beautifully decorated with various kinds of flowers. Here the Lord has eight arms. Sometimes he has four, sometimes two. Here he has eight arms with the different symbols. Lord Vishnu looked extraordinarily beautiful because the goddess of fortune and the garland were situated on his chest. This is not Lakshmi, it means Shrivats. It means he has a golden line around him. This represents Lakshmi Devi. When he's laying down on the causal ocean, then Lakshmi actually is sitting nearby. But here it means the mark of Shrivats. His face was beautifully decorated with a smiling attitude which can captivate the entire world, especially the devotees. Fans of white hair appeared on both sides of the Lord like white swans, and the white canopy overhead looked like the moon. As soon as Lord Vishnu was visible, all the demigods, Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva and the Gandharvas and all present there, immediately offered their respectful obeisances by falling down straight before him. So this is the situation here, that the Lord has appeared and everyone is completely overwhelmed. As you can imagine, if Radhamadhava started to move casually, everyone would be in great ecstasy, right? But even just slightly moved a little bit, everyone would be greatly overwhelmed, all the devotees, right? And then you and touch. So you're getting increase four times as usual. And then the ears, and everything is very heightened. Therefore the devotees, it's like Guru, he falls down, he can't express himself properly. He's just overwhelmed by ecstasy. So this is the situation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That when he appears here and he's with all his paraphernalia, says the Lord, although he never alone, the Lord appears alone, but he has all this paraphernalia with him. He has his carrier, he has his attendants with him who are offering the fans and other things for him. So all of those things, they just go to complement the beauty of the Lord. They make a very nice setting. So it's like a whole stage there with the Lord and all this other things that are going on around him, like a festival is going on around him. Very, very enchanting, very overwhelming. And the devas, they're all blissed out, and they're all with great awe and reverence, that he explained in the next verse. They're all, because he puts such a presence when he comes, the Lord has come, that it's something you've never experienced before. that you can experience the power of God or the majesty of God, then one becomes very, very insecure of one's own position in the material world, because the false ego, we think we're something special in the material world. That's what the false ego tells us. But when you actually come into contact with the Supreme Absolute Truth in person, then you can't, it's like a mirror, you can see yourself for what you are, just an insignificant thought flapping around in this body for a little while trying to do something wonderful. So that's also there, that's mixed, the happiness and the pleasure of meeting the Lord, the beauty of the Lord, and the also that fear is there, that fear that have I displeased the Lord, I have to be careful, I don't want to displease Him, otherwise I'm in a very small, awkward position. So that is you, awe and reverence. And then there's different, we've heard there's different aspects of Godhead, like we worship Krishna. The Krishna has the Supreme Personality of Godhead in His two-armed form. It's like when Arjuna saw the Visvarupa, the universal form of the Lord, by Krishna's grace, Krishna bestowed him. He said, you can't see this, but by my grace, I can see it. One cannot see the absolute truth. It says one cannot see God unless that absolute truth, that infinite, chooses to reveal itself to the finite. Then we can know Him. If God chooses that we can comprehend Him, then we can comprehend Him, not otherwise. So then he blessed Arjuna. You can't comprehend me with your present senses, therefore I will give you this divine vision. Then he showed how he was everywhere, doing everything in this universal form. That he could see, there's nothing but God. He could, everywhere he could look, he could see faces, hands, arms, legs, and all different activities going on, all elements of the material world and the spiritual world. And it was very fearful for him. He was very fearful, and he asked, please, I've seen enough. So he became very awed out and fearful. So then he said, show me your forearm. So then he changed that into a forearm form. Then he became peaceful. Then he said, please, show me your two-arm form, which is most peaceful. Then he became Krishna, his friend again. And all that fear went away. Which is that. So that fear will actually interferes with the intimate love of the devotees, the pure unalloyed devotees, that worship God only for His own pleasure. When you worship God for something, when you want something, then it's that other forms of God you will see, the Vishnu forms, Smriti. If you desire to be like the Lord, the same bodily features of the Lord, or live on the same planet of the Lord, or have the same opulences of the Lord, and you can also achieve that. Then you can go to that place where the Lord exhibits that form and that atmosphere, and you can be part of that atmosphere. It's perfection, but there's also devotees who are not thinking of themselves, they're not worshipping God for something. They're not asking God for anything. They don't want anything from God. They're self-satisfied devotees. And they worship God because they love Him. So they go to that place where He exhibits that feature of Himself. As a person who's just interested in reciprocating loving relationships. So therefore they can love God as according to their desire, or His desire. So therefore there's different arrangements. Therefore you can love God as a son, you can love Him as a friend, you can love Him as a paramount, or love Him as a or just love Him as God. But in that situation, then that idea of His being God wouldn't be there in that topmost planet of the Lord, Vrindavan. Then the idea of His being God wouldn't be there, because then with the idea of Him being the God, implying the controller, maintainer, destroyer, when we say God, that idea wouldn't be there. We don't love Him because of that, we love Him because of He's the most attractive person, He's the most wonderful person. So then there's no fear, there's no awe on that, there's no awe which is produced by fear or power. There's awe which is produced from love, by His beauty, by his wonderful behavior. That is awe. But it's a different kind of awe that we feel for Him. So those are the very fortunate devotees. So this is the Lord, He reciprocates with everyone's individual desire. As long as one follows the process that He gives, one can fulfill one's individual desires. Even on the spiritual platform, there are spiritual desires. So there's a hierarchy or a variety within the spiritual world. There's also different places that you can go and live eternally according to the different moods. So Bhagavatam, through these narrations, these historical narrations, we're hearing about the different stories of different devotees, different caliber of devotees, different ways that people worship or behold God and perceive God. So you get a whole variety there. So, but in summary, when you compare all of them, we can find that the topmost situation is in Golok Vrindavan, where God is Himself doing what He wants to do. Of course, it's more opulent than Vaikunthas anyway there, but the whole mood is really different. So then this will, by hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, those serious people are serious about spiritual life can make their decision what kind of relationship they want to have with the Lord, and then work towards that. And if one is fortunate, then one can achieve that relationship. Then that's the perfection of human life. You finish your sojourn in the material world, you finish with the cycle of birth and death, finish with material bodies, and go back and live that particular relationship eternally with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. So go by. If there are any questions, otherwise we can speak about Lokanath Goswami. Hare Krishna.
I'll ask a quick question because I want to also hear about Lokanath Goswami. And thank you for a wonderful class. I'd like you to please clarify, if you may, the position of fear in the life of the devotee. You said fear will interfere with our relationship with Krishna. So it's also interesting, fear and the word interfere means kind of to disturb. But maybe fear can also be positive or favorable in some instances in our relationship with Krishna. How do we understand this emotion of fear when we're cultivating our relationship with Krishna?
How do we understand the fear with material fear or spiritual fear?
You can choose.
Huh?
You can choose.
Well, spiritual fear, material fear would be an impetus. Material fear, we don't like it. So that's an impetus to leave it behind, to become fearless, become free of fear. But the material world is fearful. That's Krishna's statement. It's a place of dukkha-laya. Nobody likes to be unhappy. Krishna says this place is a place of dukkha-laya. The material world is fearful because of the birth, old age, disease, death. So, and it's designed like that. It is fearful to give us, to push us, so we don't become complacent here. If it's too nice, we become complacent. And we'd never ever bother to understand the purpose of life. So that is designed like that, to give us these, keep us introspective, to keep us questioning how to overcome this fear. So when we forget God completely, then we try materially to overcome fear by having a good defense system and, you know, a whole materialistic civilization to try and become free from the influences of nature. But that doesn't work. At least it hasn't worked yet. I mean, they've done pretty well in the last couple of hundred years. I mean, advanced quite a lot materially in the last couple of hundred years. But still, no one's happy. No one's really satisfied, are they? See, the quality of life is not so good. So it doesn't work. And fear in spiritual life, in its perfection, probably, well, not its perfection, its perfection would be like Krishna's in danger. The Agasura is coming. Krishna's in danger. That would be probably the perfection of fear. Otherwise, the fear would be the fear of displeasing God. Everyone was rushing around doing their service out of fear of displeasing the Lord. So there's another category. But from the point of view of the statement God fearing, it means when we say someone is God fearing, it implies they're a very religious person. They're God fearing. It means they fear to disobey God. because they have faith in the scripture, they have faith in God, and if they disobey, they know that they will suffer. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that fear generally is based on, religion is based on fear. If I don't follow religion, what will happen to me? Positive is there, also the heavenly rewards of being religious, that's also stressed, and the other side is also stressed if you don't follow. So there's some points about fear. So it's good to be fearful of the fearful of Maya. God fearing is, see, that's the first step. Not the first step, but when one is serious about spiritual life, one has to, the first step is a little humility, inquiry. Because the false ego is saying, I am God, I'm great. So inquiry means that I'm accepting some authority. So that's the first big step, I accept in some authority. That means I've given the idea up that I alone can achieve what I want. So then when you come to the point of recognizing, accepting God, so then that naturally that fear would be there in the beginning. In one sense, there would be a slight fear there of disobeying God. It means that there was no fear before of God. When, if you didn't believe in God, there's no fear of God. You're doing what you like. That's why atheistic people, it's quite popular, because they feel guilty about performing sinful activities. So then it's very convenient to say there's no God. So therefore there's many books and many philosophies saying actually, you know, this God is just a myth. So it's for those simple people, they won't feel so bad when they perform simple activities, I won't have to suffer in the future. So it's convenient for them. So one should have a healthy fear of God. Now in the material sense, we're trying to imitate God. We're trying to compete with God. We're envious of God. He is the controller, He is the enjoyer. We're trying to take that position. So then if we become God fearing, that's wonderful. From that perspective, that's wonderful that we have that. That means we're respecting God. So the first must become respect. And then talk about love later, but first of all there has to be respect. Now we're inimical towards God in the conditioned state. We're trying to utilize all God's things for ourselves. We're inimical towards Him. We're envious of Him. So now we come to the respect, and then naturally there'll be a fear of doing anything which is not sanctioned by God. So that's healthy. You're making progress.
Hare Krishna, can you hear me? I just wanted some clarity on Krishna's hair. You read the description about Krishna's hair. At Gopanim time, one Mataji told me that Krishna's hair is like the, she pointed up to the beehive in the tree, and all the bees were there, but that was tinged with red. But I was just wondering if you could clarify. I think you said that Krishna's hair is blue.
Blue hair.
Is it just a different colour bee, or...?
Those black bees, if you look at them closely, they have a like a navy blue hue. Or sometimes just look like a crow's feathers. You know, if you look closely, they have a blue hue. Like very dark blue hue.
Hey Krishna. Thank you so much. There was this point you were saying that in the material world, Brahma and everybody else has some desire. Even though they want to serve the Lord, they want to serve the Lord in a particular way. But if we see in the spiritual world also, devotees want to serve the Lord in a particular rasa. They didn't want to leave Vrindavan and go to Mathura, things like that. So how do we explain the difference between the two?
Once you're in Vrindavan, anything outside of Vrindavan is a step down. So they can't leave Vrindavan because they can't serve Krishna outside of Vrindavan like they can inside. They have to have the ambience of Vrindavan. They can't be intimate with him in Mathura or Dwarka, the king. They can't they can't be so intimate with him then. He's taken on the mood of a Kshatriya king. they can't treat him like an ordinary boy. So then they can't express their bhava, they can't express their love else. They need that ambience of Vrindavan. So that's why they want Krishna to come back there. Otherwise he could have gone, it's just not far, Vrindavan to... But Krishna can't be himself, and they can't be themselves outside of Vrindavan. And he promised to come back, so they're simply waiting, hoping today he'll come back. Okay, so we hear about Skyways later. How to deal with a situation where envious and egoistic behavior of a person, devotee, disturbs our peace of mind and our service. If an envious and egoistic person, a devotee, disturbs our peace of mind and our service, what do we do? Then we go away. We don't associate with that devotee. We associate with higher devotees. That's the best thing. And from Rasa Priya, Gopika, Devadasi from Mumbai, in Satyuga people were very pure. Is it that the people who are put in sleep during the end of Kali Yuga come in the next Satyuga? Yeah, yeah. At least the devotees, when Kalki comes at the end of Kali Yuga, he goes on it with his sword and he kills all the demons at the end of Kali Yuga. He moves at the speed of mind. I often wondered how he was going to do it. He moves at the speed of mind. Therefore he only needs a sword. He doesn't need any laser gun or whatever we may think we have at that time. Therefore there's only devotees left on the planet at that particular time. And then so everything becomes favorable. Because they're very pious, everything goes back to, you know, normal. Nature produces opulently and all the conditions become very favorable. This is the mentality of the inhabitants of the planet Earth. So they're all from all devotees from their previous time. I don't know what happens to the ones that get killed, whether they come back a bit later or not, but whether they're absolved of their sin. Maybe someone else can answer that. I don't know. But that's how I've understood it. That when all the demons are dead, then there's no need, it won't be Kali Yuga anymore. Prabhupada said even today, if you get a pious king and make everybody follow dharma, you can have it like Gopa Yuga again, which makes sense. Anyone can add on that? Janana spoke.
When Krishna kills the demons, they become purified, they usually get mukti.
Yeah. Very, very fortunate if you can be killed by Krishna. So if Kalki comes and kills you, also good luck. So then you can come back and start the year and finish up. Bhagavatam Akita. So for those that want to stay, we can speak a little to the Lokanath Goswami. We can also offer prayer for our own, very own Holiness Lokanath Goswami, whose health is not so good at the moment. You can offer prayer for him. But we'll hear about his namesake. Srila Lokanath Goswami, his disappearance day today. Says, I'm reading from this book, Sri Chaitanya, His Life and Associates. It says, in Krishna Leela, in Vrindavan Leela, he is known as Leela Manjari. It says he's a direct disciple of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lokanath Goswami, he renounced household life and he came to Navadvip to see Lord Chaitanya. But at that time he was Nimai, apparently. And Nimai ordered him to go to Vrindavan. He said, you go to Vrindavan and do your bhajan there. He said, but very soon, I'm also thinking of going to Vrindavan. I would take sannyas and go to Vrindavan. And Lokanath Maharaj was completely distressed about hearing that, how he was going to shave his hair, and he was thinking of the distress of all the devotees, that they would all be suffering. He was crying like anything. But Mahaprabhu consoled him. He told him, no, you go to Vrindavan and I'm coming there soon. He was so heartbroken that there was another great associate of Vibhava Goswami. He also went with him to comfort him because he was so heartbroken. So he decided he would go to Vrindavan with him. And those two devotees, they were very renowned. They were like Vajranandis. And they ordered Krishnadas Kaviraj that he mustn't write about them in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So that he only mentioned his name there, that they don't write about their activities. So there's not so much known about them. They went to Vrindavan, and so Lokanath used to wander around Vrindavan doing his bhajan, and then he had some very shocking news that Mahaprabhu had taken sannyas and gone to Puri, and then from Puri he went to South India. So then he said, I have to see him. So then he left Vrindavan and went to South India. So when he got there, they said he's left. he'd gone to Vrindavan. So he came all the way to Vrindavan. Then Mahaprabhu, by that time Mahaprabhu left again, he was heartbroken. missed him again. Mahaprabhu went to Prayag. So then and go to Prayag, then Mahaprabhu appeared to him in a dream. Said, "Don't be so restless. I told you, you stay in Vrindavan and do your bhajan." So he performed his bhajan there in great separation from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You can imagine, you meet the Supreme Personality of Godhead, associate with him, and he goes and tells you to go to Vrindavan, which was jungle at that time, and do bhajan there. So you can imagine the great separation he was feeling from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Anyway, then, but soon after that, then Rupa and Sanatan came, and Gopal Bhatta, they came, so that gave him great life. They could associate together. once when he's moving throughout Raja, he came to Kadirban, and he visited Kishir Kund, near the village of Umarao by Chatravan. I don't know, yes, I don't know, moving down the road. But
the same forest where they killed
Bakashura. Anyway, he was so enchanted by that beauty of that place, he started to do his bhajan there. So he sat down and did his bhajan there. Then he developed a desire to worship a deity, personal deity. And then it says that Krishna actually brought him a deity. And then he said, "This is a deity of Radha Renaud." And then that person left. And then he realized that person was also Krishna. So he began to weep and lament. Krishna said, because I saw your eagerness to serve me, the deity spoke to him. He said, "Don't worry, I'm here." He said, "Because I know of your eagerness and intense desire to serve me, I came by myself. So now you can serve me. But I'm very hungry." He said, "Quickly, give up this lamentation and go and prepare something to eat." So then Lokanath went and cooked for him. And the deity ate with great satisfaction. And then he made picked some flowers and made a bed and laid him down and with some branches from the tree and any leaves, and he fanned the deity, and that was just simple seva. We don't teach this at Mayapur Academy. And massage his feet. And he didn't have a place to keep him because he was generally moving around all the time, so then he made a big bag. Put him in the bag and carried him around his neck. So he became very famous as a great devotee of that Krishna by all the pitvasas, that he would always walk around with the deity around his neck. And they asked if they could build a house for him and the deity, but Lokanath refused. He's very renounced, Lokanath. he was so renowned, he refused to take any disciples. Then Narottam Das Thakur came to Vrindavan, and he was very inspired by Lokanath Goswami, so he made a vow that he would only be initiated by Lokanath Goswami Maharaj. And Lokanath Goswami made a vow that he wouldn't accept any disciples. So then there was a great tension there. What to do? He flatly refused. So what he would do, Narottam, when he would find out in the early morning where he went and did his ablutions, Lokanath, then Narottam would go to that place and he would clean it. He would have a broom which he would hide in the bushes. He would sweep that place and he would put a fresh pot of water there and some fine earth. He would sift the earth because you generally have to you clean your hands with earth and water. And so after some time, Lokanath was surprised. Every early morning he's going there, everything is clean and convenient. Everything convenient for him. So after some time, he just wondered who that person was. So then he went there. When it got dark, he just went down there and hid behind a tree chanting. And then he saw somebody coming. Ah, who is that? It's me. It's Narottam. And Narottam, he was shocked, because Narottam was a prince. Narottam was a multi-billionaire's son, big Zamindar king. And he was like a prince. He was so beautiful, Narottam Das Thakur. His features and everything was really highly educated and qualified. And, you know, he's a very wonderful person in every field, you know. That's why Lokanath sent him back, because he was very good with people. You know, his fathers were a big man. And he knew how to deal with people, and he was very charming, and everything about him was very influential and very potent. So with that, with his natural material qualities and his spiritual abilities, the Narottam Lokanath sent him back. He should go back, broke his heart. he should go back to Medinipur, Chetari, So then he was shocked that he was doing such a low task, and he asked, he said, why? He felt embarrassed. Why are you doing this? Why should you do this? And he said, what is your purpose? And then Narottam began to cry and just fell down and grabbed his feet. He said, my life is useless unless I obtain your mercy. And then that just melted Lokanath's heart. And they gave him initiation. So then afterwards, when he sent him back, Narottam was very also distressed. And in the book, Parthana, Narottam Das Thakur has written, after suffering much sadness, O Lord, you brought me to Braja. Pulling me by the rope of mercy, you are tied around my neck. Maya and fate forced me back into the well of material existence by cutting loose that rope of mercy. It means the Lord was merciful. He brought him to Vrindavan, got initiated, and by his maya and his fate, that rope was cut. And he had to go back to his... So there's not much known about him, as I said, because he refused to have anything written in the by Krishna Das Kaviraj. So, but anyway, he was a personal associate and a great devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We can remember him on this day, as well as our own ISKCON Lokanath Maharaj. He wanders around the world, as well as Raja, spreading the message of Nam Sankirtan. Jai Harinath Lokanath Goswami Maharaj Ki Jai, Sri Prabhupada Ki Jai, Jai Gopinath Nandi Ki Jai.